From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the show. What a week we have. Of course, getting set for Easter weekend. Ricky Cobb's going to go inside sports with us from Outkick. David Bonson inside the economy. Trey Yingst is standing by to tell us the chances of the Iranian talks now in Rome with the U.S. having any type of success, along with the look at what's happening in Ukraine. As Marco Rubio makes it clear, if we don't see some progress, we are walking away. Blame Russia. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
My personal opinion is that Harvard kind of deserves everything that's happened, everything that's coming to it. But I think Harvard is faced with a choice, and it seems like they're making the wrong choice, which is to double down on these crazy ideas.
Yeah, double down. That's right. Harvard Havoc, the Ivy institution, taking on Trump. Why anyone choosing to fight Trump will lose this battle in college because they have a tough product to defend.
Number two.
I have a very good relationship with President Xi, and I think it's going to continue. And I would say they have reached out a number of times.
Really? That's news. They have reached out a number of times. Intensity grows on the tariff war with China, our allies and nemesis, as 47 takes aim at the Fed chair as well.
Number one.
It's kind of a disturbing pattern. This Democratic Party, they have all these iconic people. They want to die on the altar of their freedom. They fixate on these people, and they don't care about the victim.
It is crazy. Keep him there. Kilmer Albergo Garcia gets his meeting with Senator Van Hollen, as the wife-beating gangster is the darling of Dems. We talk about this and where the polls reveal the nation is with Trump on illegals, borders, ICE, and more. Meanwhile, a lot of focus is going to be this weekend on the meetings in Rome between the U.S. and Iran. Why? Because 2 days ago, plans leaked out that it turns out was presented by Netanyahu to President Trump about what an attack on Iran would look like to dismantle their nuclear weapons and destroy them once and for all, and the cooperation that was needed on our side, including delivering 30,000-pound bombs, who right now Israel doesn't have, as well as knocking down the assumed retaliation. It turns out President Trump waved that off. He didn't openly deny that. Tulsi Gabbard, among the skeptics on the plan, well, in support, it seems, Mike Waltz, and I imagine Marco Rubio. What's the truth, and how does it look from Israel? Let's go out to Trey Yingst, Fox News chief foreign correspondent and author of Black Saturday. Great to see you, Trey. So much has changed since we talked. Number one, it looks like the gloves are off in Gaza. They're not only clearing land, they're holding land. And that's not how they were doing it in the first year of this war, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Brian. It's been around 560 days since the October 7th massacre, and the Israelis have not been able to get a ceasefire deal together with Hamas for a third round that could see some of the remaining 59 hostages freed from Hamas captivity. So as a result, they are now holding territory inside Gaza. Israel now controls more than 30% of Gaza. They're still pushing forward with this offensive. And we learned just 2 days ago that Hamas has rejected the latest Egyptian proposal for a ceasefire. And this means many more months of war are ahead.
And it means the hostages have to try to survive in those tunnels a little bit longer. What's the sense inside the country about the offensive as opposed to the additional talks? Is there people behind the prime minister?
There's a lot of division right now in Israel about what to do and how to move forward in this conflict. There are some family members of the hostages still being held by Hamas that are saying, look, do whatever you have to do to get a deal and end this war. Bring the hostages home, whatever the cost is. But then you have supporters of the prime minister who say the offensive should continue, that Hamas must be completely destroyed, and that the hostages are one piece of a larger puzzle. And so there's a big divide right now in Israeli society. And it has led to even some army reservists, people who served in this war, coming out signing letters and petitions calling on the prime minister to end the conflict. But the reality is at the negotiating table, there are very few options right now. And both the Qataris and the Egyptians have been unsuccessful in getting together a new agreement to at least pause the fighting.
What does Hamas want? Do they understand they get by the day they're getting more less and less options?
Hamas wants to stay in control of Gaza, which to outside objective observers seems like a reality that will never exist, given the fact that they launched the October 7th massacre, killing 1,200 people on the morning of October 7th. The question is how long they will hold this position and if this military pressure will actually change their calculation. At this point, it's not changing their calculation. And it's not just the military pressure. It's also humanitarian aid. Since early March, the Israelis have not allowed humanitarian aid into Gaza in an effort to pressure Hamas. But the Palestinian civilians who are there, around 2 million of them, are the ones paying the highest price. And it's part of the reason that we've seen demonstrations over the past several weeks against Hamas inside Gaza all along the strip, because they're saying, look, we can't live like this anymore. The war needs to end for everyone.
Meanwhile, the big story is Iran. It is the problem. They are maybe a week away from a nuclear weapon if they choose to make one, and maybe a month away from seven or eight. So in the past, Israel has not let that happen in Iraq and Syria. They've just taken things upon themselves. They evidently presented a plan to Trump and he didn't take it. He said, I want more talks. How's that resonating inside Tel Aviv?
Yeah, there was this plan that was reportedly presented by the Israelis to the Americans, the new administration. And according to the New York Times, President Trump knocked it down and said, look, we want to try a diplomatic solution first. Now, the president didn't describe it exactly as it was reported in the New York Times, but he said his first option is diplomacy. And at this point, the Iranians seem open to the possibility of an agreement. And in terms of the American interests in the region, the president doesn't want to drag the United States back into war in the Middle East. And it's part of the reason that he is sending his top negotiators, including his Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, to the region to try and get a deal. As for the location of the talks, last week they took place in Oman. There were some reports that they were going to take place in Rome. The Iranians say this weekend it would actually be back in Oman. But the bottom line here, regardless of the location, is that Iran is showing at least initial goodwill in coming to the negotiating table. And from President Trump's perspective, this is a positive sign, because if Israel does strike Iranian nuclear facilities, they couldn't do it alone. They would need the support of the United States. And that would not just mean American bombs and weapons, but it would also mean American air defense that's already deployed in parts of the Middle East, including in Israel, to shoot down any sort of retaliation. But it risks unraveling further. And that is really what we're looking at here, a possible escalation to what we've already seen happen over the past 19 months across the Middle East. The hope here for the administration is that democracy prevails and, right, and diplomacy prevails.
So Trey Yingst, our guest, you can watch him on Zoom right now, BrianKilmeadShow.com. You can see him on the website. Just click on the headsets or click on watch. So Benjamin Netanyahu is quoted in this story of saying the only acceptable deal would be if the signers, meaning the U.S., are allowed to blow up the facilities, dismantle all the nuclear equipment with American supervision, because you can't even have the remnants of or the ability to enrich uranium, because we could see how quick that enriching for energy could turn into a weapon. My fear is that Trump's not going to follow through with what he said before, no nuclear weapon at all. They got to have it down to zero, or I know the Israelis are going to look at that threat as too real, and this window of vulnerability can only be open so long.
What's interesting is when you look at the Iranian nuclear program, back in the JCPOA agreement that President Trump pulled out of during his first term in 2018, Iran was able to enrich uranium up to 3.67%, far from weapons-grade material at about 90%. Now Iran is enriching uranium around 60%, and there have been moments where international observers, including the IAEA, have observed higher levels of enrichment. The Iranians, according to their foreign minister, just yesterday said the idea of no enrichment is off the table. That's a red line for them. But what they're willing to do is discuss the confines. You could describe them as guardrails to a nuclear program that would allow them to have what they describe as a civilian nuclear program that doesn't lead to a nuclear weapon. Because the Iranians from day one have been very public about their position. They say that if they can find an agreement that allows them to continue a limited nuclear program, they're willing to move forward with it. The real issue here is that the devil is in the details. And both President Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu are negotiating. The Israelis are taking a very firm position, saying there can be no nuclear program whatsoever, or we will have to take military action. President Trump is saying, look, I'm a deal maker. Let me come to the table with my team, and see if we can find a solution here that isn't going to lead to a broader conflict in the Middle East. And it's a delicate balance beam to walk because this is a regime that has been very clear about their intentions. Just last year, we saw they launched two different ballistic missile attacks at Israel.
And by the way, I was just talking with General Jack Keane. What can't be diminished is nobody wants to see a nuclearized Middle East. And if they get a weapon, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar, all these, they're all going to get nuclear weapons. If anybody think it's in anybody's interest to have a bunch of nuclear powers in the Middle East, judging by the track record of violence and indiscriminate actions. So we'll see, because time does matter. And if they continue to drag it out, it's as if they're circumventing the process. Lastly, Trey, we're going to put sanctions on any third party that buys oil from Iran. 90% of the oil that's bought by Iran is from China. So that's a pretty strong message, too.
Absolutely. And look, President Trump is ensuring that he is getting a lot of information as all these countries are linked and as all these parts are moving, because you make a great point. These are decisions that don't just affect Israel or the United States, but it affects American allies across the region, including countries that have shown a desire to have peace with Israel, like Saudi Arabia, for example, or other countries like Bahrain or the UAE, who have already normalized ties to some extent with the Israelis. I spoke this morning in person in Jerusalem with the new ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, and he said, look, the president has been very clear with the directive here. He wants to give diplomacy a chance, and that is not just on the front of Iran, but also as it relates to Hamas inside Gaza. And he said something very interesting. I just want to shift gears here before we end. He was talking about Edan Alexander, that American citizen that's still held by Hamas, an Iranian proxy in Gaza. And he said, there are two options here, according to the Trump administration, the easy way and the hard way. President Trump, he said, would like to take the easy way. But if not, he is keeping all options on the table to respond not only to Iran, but also its proxies across the region.
Yeah, here we go. And lastly, with Hezbollah really diminished and flat on their back, have the Israelis begin to move back into the north, into their homes?
Some have in the northern part of Israel, but the Israelis are still dealing with near daily missile attacks from the Houthis in Yemen, despite nearly a month of American strikes against this Iran-backed organization there. Even this morning, Brian, there were air raid sirens sounding across this country. It was an alarm clock for all of us here as we woke up and people headed to shelters because another ballistic missile was fired at Israel from the south, from Yemen. And so this is a very developing conflict. It continues to have seven different fronts. You have not only the Houthis in Yemen, but Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Gaza. There are still Hezbollah remnants in southern Lebanon. You have these Iran-backed Iraqi and Syrian Shia militias, and then Iran itself. And so this is a very dynamic conflict, and it's part of the reason that that relationship between the United States and Israel is so close. And we can expect a lot of conversations behind the scenes and also movement of weapons, because this is something we have been observing very closely. The Americans are moving lots of weapons to the Middle East, to Israel. They're flying in cargo planes because they want to prepare for any possibility. If diplomatic efforts fail, the Trump administration wants to ensure that they're able to support their key Middle East ally, Israel, in the possibility that a broader conflict unfolds.
And how much intelligence is given to the Houthis by the Russians in terms of locations of ships and the Chinese, too, correct? The Chinese ships can get through, but it turns out we're having problems, or everybody else is having problems, right?
Absolutely. And when you look at what the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, has done, he's put out a very clear objective for the U.S. military in the region to target not only Houthi leadership, but also many of these weapons storage facilities, radar systems, and other pieces of critical military infrastructure that they're using to target not just Israel or commercial vessels in the region, but U.S. Navy aircraft carriers that they're trying to hit in the Red Sea. And there's a clear difference here in the targeted attacks against American interests in the region and the lack of targeting of Russian ships or Chinese ships that are able to move quite freely in this part of the world.
Trey Yanks, thanks so much. You don't have a boring job. One of the most dynamic in the country. He's Fox's chief foreign correspondent located in Israel. Trey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. 1-866-408-7669. So we gave you a lot right there. Hop on the phones or write me, BrianKilmeade.com. Then we talk about this economy, the trade deals. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by the founding partner at Cavalry LLC and co-host of the Ruthless podcast, Josh Holmes. Available now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
But I am here to vouch for the judicial system in the United States, which guarantees individuals the right to due process. And that is the difference between being illegally detained and abducted, like Hilmar Obrego Garcia.
You clown. Senator Chris Van Hollen holding this guy up as a martyr. This MS-13 gangster picked up in a Home Depot parking lot, hanging out with known MS-13 members, sitting there with a bull shirt on, known as a the 1990s Bulls version, known as a way to show that you're part of that group, with rolls of dollars, with no known job, and with a hear no evil, see no evil, say no evil gang mantra on his shirt. He was brought in with drugs on him. Originally supposed to be sent back because he came here illegally. They find out later that he would delay it until later on in 2019, allowed to stay in this country while they consider his asylum request, beat his wife. She has a month-long order of protection, and bruises were visible. Intake was taken. And now this guy gets picked up, sent out, after in between being arrested for driving without a license, not having a license, he didn't lose it, never had it, and having seven other people in the car, one of which was on the terror watch list. That was, he was caught in Tennessee en route to going to Texas and bringing these guys, human trafficking, they believe, or so certainly suspicious of, into Maryland. So he gets scooped up as a member of MS-13. He's on ICE's list. And now Chris Van Hollen, after staying in El Salvador for 2 days, gets a meeting with him, and he's sitting there like he's a poor victim. Cut one.
I have been fighting against MS-13 for probably longer than Donald Trump even heard about MS-13. And they're trying to make this case about Hilmar all about MS-13. When in fact, the judge in the case has said they've not provided substantial or any significant evidence to back up their claim.
I just told you the evidence. Look at the police blotter. Look at the arrest record. This guy is a terrible guy. He also is on record saying that Hilmar Obrego Garcia told ICE when he was picked up a couple of weeks ago and sent to El Salvador, he was not afraid to go to Central America before deportation to the mega prison. Why is that significant? Because he told the judge, please don't send me back to El Salvador. I'm afraid of gang violence. Which one is it? That's the one, the guy that Democrats want to rally against? Mahmoud Khalil of Colombia, from hailing from Syria? That's the guy they want to rally for? 56% of the country, when asked, said they're for deporting every illegal immigrant here. That was at 34% before Trump had to come back and finish the job. We go inside the economy, the tariff war, the deals that could be done in just a moment with David Bonson. Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I don't think he's doing the job. He's too late, always too late, a little slow. And I'm not happy with him. I let him know it. And if I want him out, he'll be out of there real fast, believe me.
And that is President Trump commenting on Jay Powell, the Fed chair, because he didn't raise rates and he was critical of the impact that these tariffs could have. And that's just summarizing a speech and an interview that he went through. David Bonson joins us now, the Bonson Group founder, managing partner, and author of Full-Time Work and Meaning of Life. David, your thoughts about Trump's unhappiness with the Fed chair?
I think you mean that because he didn't cut rates, not that he didn't raise rates.
Yes.
The president was upset that he didn't cut.
Yep.
Well, I have two thoughts. I don't agree with the president that he should be, as the commander-in-chief, as the executive branch head, going after the Fed. If we're going to have a Fed, I do think it needs to be independent from the political side. It can't be fully independent. It never has been. But the fact of the matter is, every president ever would always want a Fed cutting rates, always. You always want some form of stimulation in the economy, no matter how artificial it may be. In this particular case, I agree that the central bank should be cutting and will be. And I have no problem with the Fed pretending it's not going to in between meetings. This is what they've done forever. I've studied this as much as anything I've studied in my adult life. You can't go cut in between meetings without messaging that there's a panic. And so you did it in COVID and you did it during financial crisis, but they have a regularly scheduled meeting and the Fed is going to be cutting. And the futures market telegraphs right now an 80% chance of four more rate cuts coming this year. It's going to happen. And so I think that what happens is the president, theoretically, even though I think he's right as to what the central bank ought to do, it undermines that independence that I fear for the future. I don't want the president telling the Fed head what to do. Secretary Bessent agrees with me on this.
How do you feel about our allies now? Israel said, hey, listen, I'll do whatever you need, basically. And we have the prime minister of Italy saying, I can't talk for all of EU, but we're going to get something done. President said yesterday, 100% chance we're going to get something done. Japan, very optimistic. What do you need to see in the financial markets? I like to see deals. And why not just tell me the framework's agreed on? The framework's agreed on. And you got a big staff. Let them fill it in. What would that do for the market? What would it do for the economy?
It's baked into markets. The markets have always assumed we were going to get these deals with Europe, with Israel. Israel said the exact same thing before April 2nd. They said it on March 31st. So
did Vietnam.
And so did Vietnam, who basically had about zero tariffs with us anyways. The issue will be country by country getting these announcements. I think that they will be good. I think they will help the president politically. But for the real impact into markets, not just the stock market, but the economy, the overall ability to for our local businesses to be doing capital investment, it's China. That's the big elephant in the room. But as we go through, let's put it this way. It's kind of what we call in finance asymmetrical risk reward. If deals fell apart with Italy and Japan, that would be really bad. But those deals happening at this point are pretty well assumed that they will.
President said he was speaking to the Chinese president.
Yeah, I don't think he's talked to Xi yet, but unless something's happened in the last couple hours.
He says he has been talking to him. I thought that was interesting. They're in conversation. They expect to get a deal. Is this the approach you would think that would lead to a deal?
Well,
here it is. Cut 10.
Uh-huh.
I have a very good relationship with President Xi, and I think it's going to continue. And I would say they have reached out a number of times.
Xi or they?
Well, the same. I view it very similar. It would be top levels of China. And if you knew him, you would know that if they reached out, he knew exactly. He knew everything about it. He runs it very tight, very strong, very smart. And, we're talking to China.
They didn't say that. They say that publicly. They say it's just the opposite.
Yeah, I think that some sort of deal is coming with China. I 100% agree. The question is, what are they going to get done in the deal? Is it about trade terms? Is it about IP, intellectual property protection? Is it about the currency and China manipulating their currency to benefit them in trade? And does China have desires for us to stop manipulating our currency? Because we settle the balance of payments with U.S. dollar, obviously. So there's a lot out there. I do believe a deal's coming, but I think there's a lot of elements to it that go just beyond tariff rates.
I mean, what has to change? Number one, for national security, we cannot have our rare earth, our magnets in China's basket.
No, but what does the tariff have to do with it? This is the thing with national security is driving me crazy.
Well, they held it back.
But see, the national security issue, we should be taking full control of tomorrow. And there isn't you can jeopardize our national security, but we want 20% for it. Or you know what? We want 30% for it. There's no price for our national security. So that issue, I think, has been weakened by the fact that we pretended T-shirts in Vietnam or watches in Switzerland or coffee in South America were national security. If every single thing's a national security issue, then nothing's a national security issue. The stuff you're bringing up with China is legitimate. That should be – anything critical infrastructure should be fully 100% domesticated, at least within our bounds of control. So that issue I separate. When you're talking about regular commercial interest with China – then I think that needs to be separated. And not we got to quit pretending this is only about what's best for the issue, the importers. The U.S. has a ton of exporters that are suffering immensely right now. Small businesses I'm talking to every day.
I want you to hear what Kevin O'Leary said. Cut 28.
Tell me when the China negotiation's over. The rest I don't care about, because we're going to get to some deal with Europe and Canada, Mexico, and it's happening. And the market doesn't care anymore. It's already stopped going down. We get all that, and good job, by the way. You know, reciprocal tariffs, whatever they're going to be, 10% or zero. Nobody cares. They care, but they don't care. Everybody cares about China. China is not just a narrative about trade. It's about all the other pent-up issues, stealing IP, World Trade Organization, disputes, access to their markets. That's the big negotiation. And what Powell is saying is, if you don't get this deal done, we're going to have a lot of goods floating on the water, not being bought by Americans who can't afford the alternative.
Yeah, it's funny. I said kind of the exact same thing to you off air before we got started. I mean, I agree completely that the other issues are less sensitive in the market now because the market's largely assuming a deal will get done. Look, I believe deals were able to get done with all of those countries way before April 2nd. And that right now, China is what matters. It's the elephant in the room for the dollar amount alone, $500 billion that we buy. And just the percentage of GDP that's on the line. So there, and then his point about IP, he didn't say currency, but I'd add that to the mix. And then other deal terms and whatnot, but he said access to markets. This is where I get confused. Do we want more access to their markets? See, that goes against what some of the protectionist and anti-free traders argument is. They're saying we should stop doing trade with China. So if the president has a vision of where he wants to go and he just can't share it publicly, that's fine. I don't know if that's what's going on or not, but that would be okay. But what I think is probably the problem, Brian, is I'm not sure there is a particular vision. Are we looking for a decoupling from China? Are we looking for better terms to have more access to their markets? Those are two totally different things. I think if we're going for decoupling and we want a long-term broken relationship with China, we just don't want to be coupled to them economically, then that it can't happen in 3 weeks or 3 months or even 3 years. That's a long-term project.
But except for two things, it's to stand out. The rare metals, the magnets, which are the same thing for our defense and for our tech, and also pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, well, the issues with pharmaceuticals is vastly overblown. There is absolutely no reliance on China for us. The fact we could do that that could be done very quickly. I'm not at all worried about pharma, but I agree that should be a separated matter. We should have full, complete control of our own pharmaceutical. And that could easily be done domestically by our own policy. We don't have to involve China in that. Now, with you just make it a contingency of FDA approval. If this is vital to American health interest, you cannot have – you have to have show us and validate your contingency plans for manufacturing. I wouldn't mind them manufacturing in other ally nations, but not a communist country, not China, no.
So when you look at gas prices, they're down, they're reasonable. They say inflation did not increase as much as they thought it would. Is there anything – tariff aside, trade aside, how's the economy?
It's pretty vulnerable. I think we have a very high chance of dipping in recession based on what I'm seeing in the data of massive drop of investment, business capital goods expenditures. I think it started to drop a bit in February, dropped a bit more in March, and then I expect in April it's totally
because
collapsed.
Of this tariff?
The threat of tariff, the uncertainty. Of the tariffs.
Is there something else besides that?
No, but that covers a lot of things. I mean, when you talk about business investment, it's the major issue in the economy for me as a supply-sider that you have to produce goods and services to have economic growth. And if businesses stop producing, investing in new goods, ordering new inventory, doing new hiring, new R&D, those things eventually grind the economy down.
Well, how do you feel about the big, beautiful bill and the role it might play if it passes in the next few months?
Well, I would love a big, beautiful bill, and it needs to pass by Memorial Day if it gets
Memorial
kicked.
Day.
Yes, and I think it still can. It right now is in the committees. Then, of course, it ends up going to budget committee and then from there to the House and Senate. And they may have to conference there for some alignment. And then it goes to president's desk. All those things can happen before Memorial Day. Nothing has broken it down yet. They've had about three major hurdles. The Speaker Johnson and President Trump helped pull it over the line. Now, The issue is that the real weeds are still to be worked through as to what exactly the cost cutting will be, what the budget baseline will be, the president's order of priority for tax cuts. If all they're doing is extending the $400 billion of 2017 Trump tax cuts, and they're just not going to let those go up next year, that's a nothing burger to the economy. It's total status quo. You don't benefit the economy by doing what you already were doing. Now, you hurt the economy if you add $400 billion in tax, but there is not a single person in the market who's expecting those taxes to go higher. So by them preventing that damage, that's good just for table stakes. But then the question is, what additional tax cuts are coming and what additional spending cuts are coming? I'm reasonably optimistic. That is the piece that I just cannot believe how this tariff thing has allowed people to lose sight of how important this is.
Wow, interesting. And that'll be a nice boost, especially if you do a China deal, then you do the big, beautiful bill. Man, you could hit turbo speed.
And if you get 100% business expensing in that bill, you know, he wants no tax on tips and some other things. No tax on tips soaking wet's $100 billion over a long period of time. It's not a big issue. It's the business expensing could be very stimulative to the economy.
David Bahnsen, always great to have you in. Thanks so much. Pick up his book, Full-Time Work and the Meaning of Life. Back in a moment with Ricky Cobb.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile with a message for everyone paying big wireless way too much. Please, for the love of everything good in this world, stop. With Mint, you can get premium wireless for just $15 a month. Of course, if you enjoy overpaying, no judgments, but that's weird. Okay, one judgment. Anyway, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, with me in studio is Ricky Cobb, host of the Ricky Cobb Show, right on outkick.com. You can go see him, you can see him at 11 o'clock. You could also follow him at Super 70s Sports. Ricky, welcome.
Brian, pleasure to be here.
And also you get on Fox Nation, right?
Yes.
Get the stream on Fox Nation.
Absolutely.
First off, your thoughts. The next week's going to be a big week. Football fans get a chance to look at the draft. What's your focus?
As I look at it, I'm interested in what's going to happen with Travis Hunter. Obviously, where is Shedeur Sanders going to go? He's a two-way player, and he's very emphatic.
They say
Brian.
He's going to Cleveland.
Yeah, and if it's going to be Cleveland, look, Cleveland, they've had such a history with quarterbacks. Maybe drafting a quarterback at two is not the best thing for the Cleveland Browns. Travis Hunter is very emphatic. He wants to play full-time on both sides of the ball. He's clear about that. I think in the NFL, most people see him as an elite cornerback who can contribute offensively. It'll remain to be seen if he's going to get to play as much on the offensive side of the ball.
And then you see Shedeur Sanders, son of Deion. A lot of people are worried. They're saying, listen, if he's like the number two quarterback and his team's not winning, Deion's going to start making some noise and not focusing on Colorado. I mean, is that a legitimate worry?
I think it is. Now, when his name got associated with the Dallas Cowboys for a while in their coaching hunt, I thought, well, this is it. This is the perfect storm. If Deion wants to exit as Shedeur and Travis are leaving, what better way to do it than to go to Dallas? The fact that that didn't happen leads me to believe that, you know, maybe the commitment to Boulder, Colorado is there. We'll see. If Deion's committed to building a program and sustaining it,
huge money,
I think
he got unbelievable. It's very rare for these superstar players become coaches. Why do you think that is?
I think it reminds me of Ted Williams when he was a manager. I think for the great ones, sometimes it's frustrating that other players can't do what they did. And I think sometimes it's the bench guy, right? It's the utility guy. It's the guy who just carved out a 5 or 10 year veteran career, right? It's your Craig Councils who become oftentimes the best managers. I mean, we've seen some great players who went on to be great coaches and managers, but you're right. It's pretty rare. Deion is doing better than I thought he would. I was skeptical at first of Deion.
It's going to be good with Marshall Faulk now be coaching his running backs. One of the great ones.
Can't ask for better.
You know who was probably the most successful? Larry Bird.
Right? Larry Bird
did everything. GM as a coach and a player.
Yeah, Larry Indiana. Larry Bird is one of those guys that sort of broke the mold and was able to be successful in every facet.
So, Ricky, I want you to hear this exchange at Atlanta Braves game with the sideline reporter I guess, in-stadium reporter. Tell me what you think, how Ricky Cobb would handle this.
We're having a lot of fun up here up the Corona rooftop. Who do we got here? What's your name?
My name's Lauren.
Lauren's, all right.
And I'm Kayla.
Kayla, and you guys hang out at the rooftop lounge often?
Once a year I come out to visit.
Okay, well, we timed it pretty well. All right, good. How are you guys feeling about root for the Braves today?
Oof, I don't know. I'm hoping for the best.
What about you? Are you a Braves fan now?
Not quite.
All right, I'm gonna go to work up here, guys. Good luck the rest of the way.
Okay, Wiley. You got four innings to get the numbers.
Come on.
Get us some more Braves fans.
All right, so they want me to get your number.
They want you to get my number.
I'm dead serious. They're saying in my ear right now, she didn't believe me because she thinks you guys are not making this up. Even if you guys weren't, I might use that in the future. That's actually a pretty good move.
This is unbelievable.
So the best part of this right now is that Wiley could totally be faking it. This might be the new move. Okay. Just walk around with a FanDuel microphone and an earpiece in and convince fans that they're actually on TV.
I should have thought of this.
Hey, Ricky, is that good television?
I think it's pretty damn good television myself. I mean, shout out to Wiley and the entire Braves announcing team there. They were his wingmen,
right,
I believe.
Know. Now, that's pretty cool. I mean, plus in a baseball game, you're looking for some type of action. So overall, your team of the Bears.
I'm a Bears guy. Yes.
What do the Bears need?
Better offensive line play. Number one. You can't let Caleb Williams end up on his butt 68 or 69 times.
Is he the guy? Is he the franchise quarterback?
I think he's the guy. I do believe that. The investment is there. He's going to get a lot of runway to be the guy. Last year, you got to realize, 20 touchdown passes, only 6 interceptions in a year that otherwise was not that stellar for the Chicago Bears. So I saw some glimpses last year, Brian.
Aaron Rodgers talked to you yesterday about what happened with the Jets. He goes 3,000 miles across the country, meets with Aaron Glenn, and Aaron Glenn in 20 seconds goes, "Yeah, we don't want you back." What's going on there?
The Jets define dysfunction in the NFL. You can look at the
Browns.
Brand new coach. You can look at the Jaguars. There are other teams. But, I mean, you look at what happened last year. Woody Johnson, you bring in Aaron Rodgers. You get Aaron Rodgers' favorite toy in Devontae Adams. They end up firing the coach. They fire the general manager. You had people saying that the owner's teenage sons were giving him advice about players based on their Madden ratings. So there's a lot of things. The players gave ownership an F in the NFLPA report card for their team. It's the only team in the NFL that the franchise's players gave ownership an F.
You just come into New York
F.
and you put everybody down.
Yeah.
I don't blame you. Ricky, check out his show at 11 o'clock today and every day. Ricky, congratulations on the success over an OutKick.
Thank you so much.
You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. It's tax season, and we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's one you need to hear. $16.5 billion. That's how much the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud last year. Now here's a good number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it. Guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
From 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way, closing out a big week. Batya Unger Sargon at the bottom of the hour. Of course, One Nation coming up Sunday at 10 o'clock. That is, hopefully, you'll be able to close up your Easter, get everyone out of your house, and then focus on cable television. I believe that should be the focus on Easter. A lot of people have differing views on that. If you're looking for J.D. Vance, check Rome. That's where he is, meeting with the prime minister in Rome. One day after meeting the prime minister of Italy, met with the president in Washington. Jason Chaffetz in studio. Before we get to Jason, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
My personal opinion is that Harvard kind of deserves everything that's happened, everything that's coming to it. But I think Harvard is faced with a choice, and it seems like they're making the wrong choice.
No kidding.
To double down on these crazy ideas.
The Harvard havoc, the Ivy institution taking on Trump. Why anyone choosing to fight Trump will lose, especially when you have a lot to hide.
Number two.
I have a very good relationship with President Xi, and I think it's going to continue. And I would say they have reached out a number of times.
Really? Okay. Intensity grows on the tariff war with China. Our allies and nemesis are coming together. But what about the deals, Mr. President? Cut some deals.
Number one.
It's kind of a disturbing pattern. This Democratic Party, they have all these iconic people. They want to die on the altar of their freedom. They fixate on these people, and they don't care about the victim.
Yep, that is Victor Davis Hanson. Keep him here. Kilmer Arbergo Garcia gets his meeting with Senator Van Hollen as the wife-beating gangster is the darling of Democrats. Go figure. We talk about this and where the polls are and what they reveal about the president's immigration strategy. Jason Chaffetz, I'm stunned. You just mentioned me. You know Congressman Chris Van Hollen turned Senator Chris Van Hollen. He goes to El Salvador and after 2 days gets a meeting with his constituent, an illegal immigrant from El Salvador. Two judges said he's a member of MS-13. He's already picked up a traffic stop with seven people, one of which on the terror watch list. Was rounded up. You could see he was arrested with rolls of cash in his hand. He beat his wife twice. This is the guy that Democrats want back?
I don't understand it. I'm so flabbergasted by this. This is not. We don't owe this guy anything. We don't owe him anything. He's a resident of El Salvador. He's back in El Salvador. He's not even in jail in El Salvador. But you know what? We don't import and go out of our way to facilitate bringing in gangbangers, let alone MS-13 people who beat their wives. Even in Tennessee, there's a news article about him getting pulled over and potentially being involved and engaged in some human trafficking. Yet the Biden administration just let him go. So we don't owe him anything. I don't understand why they continue to prioritize the criminal element and that they don't prioritize the people who want to come here legally and lawfully.
This guy, President Bukele, was in the White House on Monday, and at which time he said, you know, I talked to some of the people that we have in our jails. He said, you know, what were you doing? Well, I was in the U.S. I was arrested six times. On the seventh time, I ended up here. Six times. And he's mocking us. Today, he put out, he's a funny guy, he sounds like. He says, put out on Twitter, he said, Kilmer Arbergo Garcia miraculously has risen from death camps in torture, now sipping margaritas with Senator Van Hollen, the tropical paradise of El Salvador. He went on to say, now that he's confirmed healthy, he gets the honor of staying in El Salvador custody. So he's not going anywhere. And Chris Van Hollen speaks. Cut to.
But I am here to vouch for the judicial system in the United States, which guarantees individuals the right to due process. And that is the difference between being illegally detained and abducted, like Kilmer Arbergo Garcia.
Abducted. This guy was on a removal order. And what happened is Homan looked at the list and said, get this guy out. So he already had his day in court. His asylum claim was being evaluated. Bottom line is, I could see this being a story, but it is the Democratic story. But be smart about it, Congressman. Do you think that Senator Booker continues with his plan to go there next week?
I don't understand. Go ahead. Knock yourselves out. Go down there. Take all
taxpayer
the pictures.
Dollars? With
go take all the pictures you want. But to what effect? Like, what about the victims? You know, I had a chance earlier this week to interview a sheriff there in Maryland. And I asked the sheriff, I said, have you ever seen Senator Van Hollen there? Have you ever seen Senator Van Hollen do a ride-along and see what MS-13 is doing in your communities? No, never seen him. What, Baltimore? You can't go fix Baltimore? Why don't we go work on Baltimore before you go down to El Salvador and try to import MS-13 gang members? They ought to be applauding the idea that they can help clean up that community.
Well, listen to Leader Hakeem Jeffries, cut six.
When you have a Supreme Court decision that was issued instructing the administration to facilitate Mr. Abrego Garcia's return, and it seems to me that ultimately the court is going to need to aggressively enforce its decision. When you've got lower courts who have issued orders, then of course the jurisdiction will fall with them.
So are they going to be forced to bring this guy back? I mean, they're going to continue. This Judge Borsberg is not stopping.
Don't tell me, Democrats, you're all about the rule of law when you open up the gates and let millions of people into this country illegally. I mean, you have no water to carry on that. And this is, again, it's priorities. What are you trying to fight for? I don't think there's a legal case. Mm-hmm. He's a resident of El Salvador. He's a gangbanger. He beat, this woman, according to her.
He had a three-month protection order.
I mean, why do we feel like we have an obligation to this guy, Democrats? We don't. Tell me what you're doing to help all the legal, lawful people, the people that are getting in line, coming in the right way. Show me what you're doing there. Work with Republicans on that.
So 56% of the country are now in support of deporting all illegals. It was 34% in 2016. So they've had it. And thank you, Joe Biden, for absolutely outraging almost every American with your absolutely irresponsible border policy. But let's talk about the other major story, and that's the tariff trauma. What are we going to see the end of this? How do you think the president is doing conducting this?
Look, I think we're wake up 6 months from now and the country is going to be much better off. I actually like it. I think the idea of reciprocity between the countries that we have equal. But I kind of wonder, I'm starting to wonder out loud, if you take tariffs down to zero, I don't know that necessarily meets the goal that the president is seeking, which is to have some revenue from these tariffs. So I don't know where the negotiations are. I think we have a lot of friends out there like Japan that we can come up with some good quality deals with. Mm-hmm. I think the market is certainly seeking that, but the president knows how to negotiate. I give him that. I wouldn't want to be on the other side of the negotiation from President Trump.
Well, some are outraged by, including Thomas Friedman. You have another David Brooks of the New York Times calling for a nationwide protest, conservative. You listen to Thomas Friedman, cut 18.
Day two has to be a strategy for what you do the morning after here. How do you then build the industrial base that you want to take advantage of the time you're buying with your tariffs? So what are these guys doing? Trump put up a wall, against China. And then they went out and shot the American car companies. Ford was just downgraded today. I saw its stock, I think, is down to $7.50. Why is that? Because Ford did everything that Biden asked it to do, that irrational company would ask it to do, that we would want it to do. And then what does Donald Trump do? He comes in with his right-wing woke bull and says, we don't do EVs here. EVs are for girly men. We only do manly industries.
Well, he's being sarcastic at the end, but he's not going to provide a mandate for electric cars. I guess that upsets Thomas Friedman. What's your thought?
Yeah, I don't think there needs to be a mandate. I think it's a viable car. Tesla has proven that. I'm sympathetic to Ford because I do think, right or wrong, and I think it was wrong, they kind of followed the lead of President Biden, and they did invest billions of dollars to try to go all green with all these promises that were just hollow. They were fake. They weren't true. I think if you are a major manufacturer and you're making the effort and making the public commitment to move your manufacturing, you just can't flip the switch and 2 weeks later start making auto parts in Dearborn, Michigan. It's just you can't turn it that fast. I wish they could, but they can't. But if you make the commitment, I do think you should be able to get some relief.
Absolutely. The president, I think, is thinking about putting that on hold, the car part of it. That's where I think that he could have thought about it better.
Well, and there are other industries that with manufacturing, if they make the commitment and they're going to onshore things, give them at least some time to actually execute on that and reward those companies that are going to do that. And then we've got to get a workforce that's ready to actually fill those jobs.
Right now, according to Mike Rowe told me on Friday, that we have 430,000 open manufacturing jobs.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It is a lot, and it's a lot of skill set, and it's something that needs to be trained up for. These will be good quality jobs, but you can't, again, just assume that we've got tens of thousands of people. I don't like the idea of handing out all these benefits to people for not working when you have so many jobs that are open.
Here's Scott Bessent on what the strategy is from Trump. Cut 17.
We've got a process in place. We're working on the big 15 economies first. We had a fantastic meeting with Japan yesterday. I believe there have been calls with the EU already. And then we have South Korea coming in next week. And I believe India is also talking. That's moving very quickly.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, let's do it. India, South Korea, Japan, and the EU. I mean, and then, you know, obviously Canada and Mexico. And those are the big ones that we've got to get done sooner rather than later.
All right, Congressman, what else are you doing today?
On Outnumbered. Straight up behind you. I'm the man in the middle.
All right.
I'm dressed like an Easter egg. I'm ready to go.
You're ready to go. And, of course, you can do the religious thing because you're pro-religion.
Oh, yeah.
You have
I'm a Christian.
Strong moral compass.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, that's good. What I keep telling myself.
There's been some questions.
Yeah.
Molly Kidd.
True North.
Jason Chaffetz, thanks so much. Bottom of the hour, Batia Unger Sargon. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If it's not possible, if we're so far apart that this is not going to happen, then I think the president's probably at a point where he's going to say, well, we're done. You know, we'll do what we can on the margins. We'll be ready to help whenever you're ready to have peace. But we're not going to continue with this endeavor for weeks and months on end.
Well, that was interesting when Marco Rubio came out and said yesterday in France before he met with Macron, who's going to help. He says, I want to play a role in this, and maybe that'll help. We'll see. Macron is unable to persuade Putin not to invade. Remember, he was there for about 12 hours the week before. So right now, Vladimir Putin, it's all his fault. Not only did he start it unnecessarily, not only has he paid the huge price economically, caused uproar in the West and the East of Europe and around the world, strife here at home as people debate how many billions we should be giving them. So my sense is either way, we're going to do a rare earth deal with Ukraine. He's going to announce it Monday or Tuesday. Meanwhile, Russians are trying for a battalion move. First time a whole mechanized battalion moved in the south in with Ukraine, and they were able to repel it for now. But I think that we should arm up. I mean, General Keane said it. Arm up the Ukrainians. Tell them if you walk away, Vladimir Putin, if you continue to stall, there'll be a price to pay. Number one, more sanctions on third parties that are buying your oil. That includes India and China. And what about additional bank sanctions on you and fully reinforcing the natural gas trade you're doing with the West? Because it was supposedly going to hurt both of them. But I just thought, too, General Keane talked about where they go from here. And with me today on Fox and Friends. And he basically says you have to arm them up and you got to fully sanction them and let them know if it continues, there's going to be additional sanctions. Here he is, cut 44.
The president wants peace. President Zelensky of Ukraine wants peace. The Ukrainian people want peace. There's one player here who doesn't want it, and that's Putin. And he's been stiffing us for weeks. The secretary knows that, Marco Rubio. Mike Waltz, the national security advisor, knows it. The negotiators know it, and the president of the United States know it. And this is the Russian playbook. Delay, 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 stall, get concessions.
And that's maybe. But if they push it too far and the U.S. walks away, they're going to be back up into that never-ending war. I'm not convinced they want the never-ending war. I think there's a part of them knows how hard it is to recruit. They're having a huge problem recruiting. And with the money they got to give them to bribe them into doing it, they're out of prisoners. Most of them are dead. So the Russian officials continue to reiterate that Russian President Putin has a non-negotiable demand for extensive territorial concessions from Ukraine. Really? So additional concessions upon the land you stole, and the forces recently conducted a roughly battalion-sized mechanized assault, but it was repelled. The Kremlin is adopting increasingly threatening rhetoric towards the rest of Europe. People notice that, especially in the Baltics. They're also increasingly adapting their drones to facilitate chemical weapon strikes. Can you imagine that? Chemical weapons in Europe with these countries so tightly knit together. Another thing is huge stakes for Israel and for the U.S. as the U.S. gets in talks with Iran. I am not optimistic anything will emerge. Sadly, maybe Iran will fake like they're going to get something done. The president will say, we're making progress, we're almost done, and then they're going to back off. Because if they're able to go another year, they're going to get new missile defense in there. They're going to learn from the intelligence, from the attacks from Israel and the unsuccessful attacks on Israel that the U.S. and Israel and even Jordan was able to help thwart. And they're just going to arm up again. We're going to say, why did we miss that window? What could you possibly use? I'm not saying I want war. And if you read that article in the New York Times, Susie Wiles was pushing back and saying, we don't want a wider Middle Eastern war. Tulsi Gabbard, as Director of National Intelligence, said, there's some indications the war could spread if we start bombing into Iran. Why? They got their proxies that might invade and create havoc in Yemen and other places. That's true. But the other side of the whole thing would be for Iran to get a nuclear weapon, Saudi Arabia would have one the next day. Here's what General Keane said on Fox and Friends, Cut 38.
While the United States wants peace and stability in the region, we've got to recognize Israel's position here. They look at Iran having a nuclear weapon as an existential threat to their country. And that's the reality of it, and we've got to be able to support them.
Yeah, and then he went on to say what will happen next. Cut 39.
If Iran got a nuclear weapon, Brian, and this is why the president is adamant about this, what will happen in the region? There will be a nuclear arms race in the region. Yep. Saudi Arabia, the UAE, other countries will all get nuclear weapons. And the danger of that is, given the volatility of the Middle East, we could see for the first time in history an exchange of nuclear weapons.
No
question. Because of that volatility and that destability.
So the stakes
are very high here.
We know Israel has nuclear weapons. I'm not worried about them. Pakistan, I'm always worried that they have nuclear weapons. India also has the bomb. Not worried about them. China will be responsible, as will Russia, enemy nation, sure. North Korea, everyone should be worried about that. And then to let Iran welcome into that club, knowing that the door is wide open now. I know Michael Waltz and Marco Rubio, when they were in Congress in the House and Senate, I know where they stood. I don't know what's going on and who's listening to who in Washington, in the White House. I know J.D. Vance is not for it. Tulsi Gabbard was not for taking out Soleimani. I don't know how she's going to change her tune. Big fan of both, but they're just differing views. And I hope the president goes with his original instincts, the ones that took out Soleimani, because it makes America safer.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
When you have a Supreme Court decision that was issued instructing the administration to facilitate Mr. Abrego Garcia's return, and it seems to me that ultimately the court is going to need to aggressively enforce its decision. When you've got lower courts who have issued orders, then of course the jurisdiction will fall with them.
So that's Akeem Jeffries, who just flabbergasted that we sent these people over to El Salvador. One in particular kind of stands out. I think you might have heard his name. He's probably the most well-known illegal immigrant ever. Kilmar Abrego Garcia, who told ICE, by the way, yesterday, when he was picked up a couple of weeks ago and sent over to El Salvador, he was not afraid to go back to Central America. That was right before his deportation to a mega prison. That's where Senator Van Hollen was, meeting with him and express his feeling towards his wife, now that they're separated, that he loves her. With me right now is Bhatia Unger Sargon, journalist and author of Second Class, How the Elites Portrayed America's Working Men and Women. Bhatia, welcome back. Your thoughts about... the flabbergasted Democrats upset that this guy has not been brought back.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. I cannot believe they're literally going with Je suis Kilmar, right? Like, they are literally out here white knighting for a wife beater, a human trafficker. This guy is the scum of the earth, a guy who had insignia of MS-13, which is they had the eyes, the ears, and the mouth of the president crossed out. Okay, this is a gangbanger, and they are literally out here staking their entire reputation on this person's due process rights, which, by the way, he got due process. He had an order of deportation. The one mistake that the Trump administration made was they sent him to the wrong country. But you know what, Brian? Whatever country they sent him to, this is a person who belongs in prison.
Right.
Because that is where you belong when you beat the crap out of your wife when she is holding your child. And they are just, the Democrats want this to be their poster child. I just cannot get over it. And just one more thing, Brian. I'm starting to think that the Trump administration is picking these cases and then intentionally withholding crucial information about them to see how far the Democrats will go before it all comes out who they are. I think they did that with Kilmer. I think they did that with Mahmoud Khalil, where it turns out he was part of UNRWA, an organization that the Biden administration determined was so tightly connected to Hamas that they defunded them, right? So I think Trump is just doing an amazing job making an absolute mockery of the Democrats.
Right. I mean, would it have been simpler to give this, put him to another country? Perhaps. But to think that this guy would, upon further review, not come out worse. So do you think that Cory Booker goes next week? Evidently, he's putting together a team to go to visit this guy next week.
I really hope he does, Brian.
Think about this. And he's gonna, you know, he's going to cry and do something histrionic. Here's what Chris Van Hollen said. Cut three.
We need to make sure that the court system works and due process works, because if you take it away for any individual, it's a very short road to taking it away for every American.
First, they come from Kilmer, and then they're going to come from Kilmeade. Am I correct? They're going to go right from speeding ticket to an El Salvadorian prison for all of us. We're all doomed. So have you been on CNN when they've discussed this case?
Yeah.
And do they understand how bad a guy this is, or like who they're defending?
Well, what they'll say is that the slippery slope that Van Hollen made, which of course is nonsense, it's projection, right? Like, this is the thing with the Democrats. Every accusation is a confession. They're saying if Trump deports illegal gangbangers, he's then going to come for us. No, the only person making a slippery slope between citizens and non-citizens is the Democrats in making that argument, right? People are saying, oh, you know, if he doesn't have civil rights, I don't have civil rights. He doesn't have civil rights. You have them because you are an American. You should be zealous of that. You should be zealous of the difference between you and a legal immigrant. You should be proud of being an American. And instead, they want to dilute their own rights.
It's crazy. This guy, President Bukele, is a riot. He said, Gracia, miraculously risen from the death camps and torture, now sipping margaritas with Senator Van Hollen as the tropical paradise El Salvador. He goes and posts again, said now that he's been confirmed healthy, he gets the honor of staying in El Salvador custody. And then when asked, are you going to finance Mark Green as chairman of Homeland Security, a codel for Democrats to go visit this guy, he says this. There is no excuse for Dems to waste taxpayer dollars visiting and defending a transnational gang member and reported domestic abuser. If Democrats care so much about defending the individual, they can use their own personal credit cards, not taxpayer money, to virtue signal their radical base. I can't really challenge anything he said.
Right. And honestly, it reminds me of Bernie Sanders and AOC flying in private jets at taxpayer expense around the country to fight
oligarchy.
Exactly. To fight the oligarchy and fight climate change. Right. I mean, the ads just write themselves.
So to talk about that, the Democrats, they just did the oligarchy tour, I guess, is getting big crowds. And it prompted one expert, Nate Silver, and another to look and put odds on who is going to be the leader of the Democrats come 2028. And I was a little surprised to see that he and his buddy on the podcast put their money. His name is Galen Droop. Do you know him?
Mm-mm.
So he's another pollster. This is what they say, who is going to emerge as the leader. Cut 46.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has broad appeal across the Democratic Party, and there's a lot of people who could potentially get on board with her.
I agree with everything. She was going to be my first pick, and I can't conceal that now, right? Because of some of the polling, because she has this kind of progressive lane, probably not to herself, because she is younger and media savvy. I mean, look, in polls, if she were to run trying to primary Chuck Schumer, she is now ahead in those polls. And New York Democrats are actually a pretty moderate lot.
I think she's going to run. If you've been following her moves in terms of her fight oligarchy tour, in terms of the kind of content she's putting out on social media.
You think she's going to run? Do you think she's a presidential candidate, Bhatia?
I didn't think that until Nate Silver said it, but now I'm thinking about it. And, you know, honestly, I mean, obviously, I'm sure Republicans are really hoping for that because a lot of her ideas are not popular. I really like her. I think she's very genuine. I think she does appeal to younger people. I don't think she has a chance in hell because her views that she's chosen on populism are very out of touch with the working class. So people keep asking me, Bhatia, why are the Democrats in every issue that's an 80-20 issue, they keep picking the 20, right? Every issue that is like massive support from the American people, they keep picking the other side of it. And the reason for that, Brian, is because that's their base, is the top 20%, the over-credentialed college elites. That's who's turning out for these rallies. They're almost all white. They're all older people. They're wealthy people. That is who the Democrats' base is. And those people really like AOC because they think she's what young people like. But actually what young people like is Donald Trump, right? There's this very interesting moment happening where the Republicans through Trump have become a lot cooler and the Democrats are a little bit more cringe. On policy specifically, I think she's great on healthcare, which is something the Republicans really need to take a look at. She really does speak to where a lot of people's frustration is on that. But on immigration, on the economy, on
foreign policy,
social issues, the trans issue, she's got nothing else except for a lot of real humanity and charisma. So I would love for her to run. I think that would be a great conversation for us to have as a nation.
Well, you know what? I would like to see Democrats really run against each other. They don't have real primaries. You know, they selected Biden because Bernie Sanders looked like he was going to win. They selected Hillary Clinton because it looks like Bernie Sanders was going to win. The last real fight they had was Obama, Hillary, John Edwards. Right. And you actually just let them fight it out. Plus, you have to find out where the weakness is in their agendas and in their them as candidates. But when you don't put them against each other, you basically just keep them in a bubble until they get exposed to the other side. And then they're always shocked when things don't go their way. So Yale did a survey and they say that right now among the Democrats, number one is Kamala with 27%. Number two is AOC at 21. Pete Buttigieg at 14. Newsom at 6. Shapiro at 4. That's among Democrats. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's early.
It's very early.
But
yeah.
To see where that goes. The other thing I want to talk about is what's going on with these Ivy Leaguers. I think one of the great things that President Trump is doing that I was not thinking was going to be an issue was when Barnard got raided and they started with the anti-Israeli, anti-Semitic protests and takeovers, which is an affiliate of Columbia. President Trump said, okay, no, we're not tolerating this. Who's in charge of it? Mahmoud Khalil, you're out. Over 300 have been ousted. These schools have been scrutinized. Now $400 million has been frozen with Columbia. They've had another interim president leave. They're going after Harvard and Princeton, freezing their funds. But I think this is the one thing. They're going to expose the bias on these college campuses. Where do you think it's heading?
I could not agree with you more. First of all, I think Trump already won with Harvard because he got them to say, like, no way, we will never stop importing, you know, anti-American, anti-Semitic foreign students for their money. No way, we will never stop discriminating against conservatives. You know, like he got them to admit that they really don't stand for all of the like faux values that they pretend to stand for. They literally came out and said, we're going to euthanize these animals if you don't give us the $2 billion. It's like you have a $60 billion endowment.
$60 billion.
Could you save your own animals, please? Like, no, they will not. And the whole thing is like they think that they have the Trump administration hostage because they live in this bubble, as you said, Brian. They think everybody worships them. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, that top 20%, the over-credentialed college elites, they do. They look at Harvard as this beacon of whatever. The other 80% of Americans look at Harvard as this stuck up elitist institution that has contempt for them, that hates America, hates the Jewish people, hates Western values, and literally undermines them by inculcating in the next generation all of the worst ideology. The American people could care less if Harvard exists or not.
Right.
And I think Trump is doing such an amazing job putting pressure on all of the weakest points that the Democrats have.
So I'll push back with Ryan Enos. He's a Harvard government professor. Cut 32.
It would be foolish of me to say that it doesn't exist.
You mean anti-Semitism? Because
of course, anti-Semitism does exist in the United States. But one thing we have to make sure is that we don't conflate these things like people protesting a war with anti-Semitism. And, you know, in the United States, people have a right to protest whatever they want.
So he feels nothing is out of control. He went on to say this about the taxpayer money. Cut 33.
Ultimately, this isn't a question about funding. And this is a question about the freedom of institutions and free speech in the United States. And so, you know, we could put aside that dollar amount. And I would ultimately be fine with that as long as Harvard remains a place that is free, like all institutions should be in the United States to decide what they can do for themselves.
So should they do what Hillsdale did, just not take any money, what the University of Austin's doing in Texas now, just not take any money?
They're welcome to do that. They are welcome to put their money where their mouth is and say we are a private institution that stands against the Jewish students who go here, against the United States of America, against conservatives, and against viewpoint diversity. If they really want to do that, if they want to pay $2 billion for the right to say that, Gesundheit, as my people say, go and be healthy, knock yourselves out. What you don't have the right to do is take $2 billion from the hardest working Americans, from their taxpayer dollars, and institute a regime that undermines the very country that they exist in and that they are feeding off of and spooning off of and just basically, you know, using the American people in order to undermine them. And the worst part about it is, Brian, that the Democrats oversaw an economy. You remember when President Obama defunded vocational training? Yeah. The whole idea there was everyone's going to go to college. That's going to be the avenue to the American dream. So exposure to anti-American ideology at college campuses became the gatekeeper of whether you could afford the American dream. It's so disgusting. Yeah. And I'm so glad Trump is exposing it.
Well, but I love everything. I love the fact that they're going to examine what foreign students get accepted, examine admissions, what your policy is, make them go ahead and define it. And then tell me, you say you're a great research institution. Show me what you're doing. Show me what you have achieved. Show me how much money is going to research, how much is going to overhead, how many people were hired. On discovery, when all these cases are this being lined up, Harvard's going to say, I give. Totally. Let's just cut a deal here. I don't think they want the scrutiny. And they don't think anyone had the courage to do it. Meanwhile, how ironic that Joe Biden goes there yesterday, waddles into a class, drops his ice cream, and then just saunters after out. I mean, this is... That's what you left.
Really sad. Yeah. And I think the one thing that they will really not stand for, which was in the demands from Trump, was every professor and every administrator having all of their work screened for plagiarism. They will never allow that, Brian.
That's Christopher Rufo that exposed. Yeah, that's a problem. And now with AI, I love to see like AI proof. Lastly, I think it's also important to bring up that they have the anti-Semitism. They got the money. I also think they're going to look into what these other countries are doing. Mm-hmm. So you have foreign students, right? Mm-hmm. Why is Qatar giving mm-hmm. Texas Tech billions of dollars? What do they want in return? Why is Saudi Arabia and China doing this? I think they got to be able to register this money, because if you're going to take U.S. institutions, you're going to put your your residents there, your citizens there, what are you doing with this money? I just think, you know, if I had an institution, if I had a charity, and I was getting money from Gaza, there'll be an investigation into me. So Kristi Noem is looking into all of this. I don't think they're going to love this autopsy.
It's great. It's great. Like you said, I love it all, straight into my veins. And the fact that the people who are affiliated with these institutions are under this like insane misapprehension that the American people admire them and are going to stand up for them and are going to put their political capital on the line for Harvard. Yeah. It's so insane.
You wouldn't even let us take a tour on your campus, let alone actually go and get into your school, even as a valedictorian. I just thought it was so interesting. The New York Times podcast interviewed the president of Princeton, and he's talking about we have diversity. But when it comes to something like climate change and vaccines, there is no school of thought. There's a climate change is real and vaccines work. Oh, okay. Do you listen to yourself? Bhatia, thanks so much.
Thank
I will see you,
Brian.
On One Nation Sunday at 10 o'clock, all right?
I sure will.
Back
God
in a
bless
moment.
You.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, I think this is real. We'll see. Her comments so far, she's been kind of quiet. Of course, she does a typical thing the left always does. The left will, you know, they always accuse us of what they're doing. And the other thing they always do, the left will tell a lie. Trump did something wrong. Big media will report it. Big tech will amplify it. And then if you tell the truth, they call you names. And that's exactly what she did. I think she called President Trump and his administration bullies for simply pointing out that looks like she lied on these forms, and she did it to get better terms and a better rate on the loans. So she was doing it for personal gain, and you're not supposed to do those kind of things.
So the attorney general in New York, who called out President Trump and sued him in civil court and won a judgment of $450 million, knocked down to something like $270, and now the president's appealing it and find out if he owes it. Why would the president be found guilty? They said he falsified financial documents. The banks didn't complain. He pushed back on it, but unsympathetic judge decides he's owed this. The state is owed this money, even though nobody got hurt on this. So then they looked at Letitia James and said, well, she's got a 5-bedroom dwelling. How come she only listed it 4? She lied. Hey, wait a second. She bought properties in 1983 and 2001 with her dad as a co-signer, as well as listing him as her spouse. She lied on a form. And what about saying that Virginia is a primary residence to get favorable terms on a purchase? Not New York, where she's attorney general. She lied. By the way, quick note, History, Liberty, and Laughs, back in action with Fox Nation, June 21st, Dayton, Ohio, Victoria Theater, August 23rd, Winspear Opera House in Dallas, Texas, and in Richmond, Virginia, September 27th. It's going to be great. It's patriotic, inspirational, motivational. BrianKilmeade.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. Thanks for being with us all week long. It's been really interesting. Shannon Bream is with us now. When a day is not interesting, in the Trump era, I don't know what it is. Tommy Lahren, host of Outkick, bottom of the hour. And, of course, we have One Nation coming up Sunday at 10 p.m., and a lot to discuss. So let's bring in Shannon Bream right away. Shannon, who do you have on tap this weekend?
Well, Senator Chris Van Hollen, fresh back from El Salvador, where he was hanging out with Kilmer Obrego-Garcia. I got a lot of questions about that trip and their conversation that they had, too. So he's going to be with us. We've got Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. We're going to talk about interior tariff connections and all of the battles over that. We've also got Butch Wilmore with us. You remember the astronaut who got stuck in space for 10 months? He's an elder at his church, and he stayed in that role while he was up there floating around outside of Earth, calling parishioners, checking on them in the hospital, leading devotional services from space. So we went down to his church in Houston and hung out with him and some of the parishioners there to talk about how you keep being an elder when you're flying around in space.
That is so interesting. Plus, yeah. You are flying around in space. It's almost as daring as Blue Origin. How those news anchors, they would be able to survive, and the pop stars, that 3 minutes in space. I just want, you know, and
it's
then
to, changing.
And to jump out of the capsule and kiss the ground.
I mean, Butch didn't do that.
Ah, he did.
I mean, Butch had a different take, I think,
right.
Probably.
Look, I'm for space travel. I just think that they really jazzed it up to a point where it's actually, I think, it's going to be a career hurter rather than a life transformational situation.
I don't know that you watched the morning show on Apple TV with Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston. And they did this a while back where Reese Witherspoon ends up going up in a rocket. And I was like, that to me was when the show jumped the shark. I look at Sheldon like, I can't watch the show anymore. This is so ridiculous. And when they announced that they were actually going to do this, that's all I could think about is like how ridiculous it seemed on the show. But good for them. I'm chicken. I wouldn't do it. And, you know, I hope they enjoyed.
So just so funny, just to go back, I just hope, I know you're going to look at this. Kilmer's arrest record in Prince George's County police chief. He's with the gang field interview team. So they looked at him, the gang experts. I'll go to Senator Van Hollen. I'm not sure. He says he's a gang expert.
He does.
At him. He's hanging out with gangsters. And they mentioned all the guys he's with. And these guys are known MS-13 guys. So let's look at this guy, Obrego Garcia, wearing a Chicago Bulls hat that represents that they are a member in good standing with MS-13. Officers contact a proven and reliable source of information who advised that Kilmer is an active member of MS-13 mm-hmm. with the Western Clique, which is always my goal to be with the Western Clique. The confidential source further advised that he is the rank of Chique with the moniker Chile. So he's got nicknames. He's got paraphernalia. He's hanging out with them. But you know what? I'm just worried about his welfare if he goes back to a prison full of MS-13 people. And then we know about the trafficking, and we know about the beating his wife. That's the one that Senator Van Hollen is spending our money to visit?
Well, and that's got to be one of my first questions for him. First of all, I do want to know who paid for it, because that's one of the questions that Patty Morin had. Her daughter, Rachel Morin, obviously not connected to Obrego Garcia, but another man who was in the country illegally. She's a Maryland constituent, this woman who was raped and killed violently by this guy. The mom says there was barely an acknowledgement, no outreach from the senator when that happened to her daughter. And she wants to know why he would spend then taxpayer money to go down and talk to this guy who, you know, some say father of the year, some say gang member who beats his wife. I would say I was interested this morning that his wife did an interview, and when she was pressed on those allegations, she did not answer. So she didn't deny them. She didn't say, oh, no, that report is phony and I never made that report. She just moved on past that question.
Well, you have an expertise in this area. You focused a lot on that. And do you say it's unusual for people, if they were victims of domestic violence, to stay with a guy, especially people who feel as though they have very few financial financial opportunities?
It's very, very sad, but it tends to be, for a lot of people, a pattern in which they don't know where else to go. They're frightened, or they do still very much love this person, feel like it's a one-off and that they can stay and work it out. And they've got children. I mean, there's a lot there. But she didn't deny making those allegations.
So here's Stephen Miller, Cut 5.
One case after another of women who have been abducted, beaten, raped, murdered. Democrats don't care. Democrats don't call. Democrats don't apologize. President Trump pledged and promised and vowed, and I was with him on the campaign trail. He vowed that he would come into office. He would find the members of MS-13. He would find the members of Train Daragua. He would find the people, the illegal aliens that were menacing and threatening our families, our children, and he would get them the hell out of the country, and it's exactly what he's done. And instead of Democrats saluting it and celebrating it, they're trying to retrieve the illegal aliens from the countries where they've been sent and bring them back to our shore.
So obviously he's not happy about this. Can I talk to another area of your expertise? And that is about birthright citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, it was done for slaves because racist Americans, unwilling to forget about that horrible institution, were not looking at black Americans as citizens. So they said, no, birthright citizenship, born here, taken against their will, yes, but they're born here, they are Americans. Does that still hold up today? Do both sides admit the situation is being abused and not how it was originally intended?
No. Both sides do not say that. One side says it's being very much abused and that there are literally, by most counts, millions of children in this country as a result of that, where neither of their parents were here legally when they were born, but they now have citizenship. And the other side says, well, yeah, this is the way we've always understood it since the 14th Amendment was passed, and there's no reason to change that now. Well, the Supreme Court is going to wade into this conversation May 15th. They've added arguments on a very expedited basis. But I got to caution people, I don't think they're going to get to the merits of the birthright citizenship issue. I think what they're going to do is get to the merits of whether a federal district judge, there are nearly 700 of them, any one of them can put things on hold nationwide. I think that's going to be the argument on May 15th. And so depending on what they do, it won't just apply to birthright citizenship. It will apply to any number of different issues, federal spending and firing people and all kinds of things, that there are nationwide injunctions against the Trump administration right now.
So, yeah, I mean, this is interesting. It's a great constitutional argument, something I expect in a law class. But I'm certainly Trump knew the executive order was not going to just go without a challenge, right?
Oh, yeah. I think that with a lot of what they did, starting on day one and going forward, they knew, obviously, it would immediately go to court. But they want that because they want questions and they feel like rolling the dice thinking, I think the courts may be favorable to some of these things that we're trying to get done. So let's press the issue. We know we're going to get sued as soon as we do it, but let's fight it through the courts and try to get an answer on executive power.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. So let's talk about the colleges. We look like Harvard's fighting back and says, how dare you, federal government, deny us getting free money from the federal government? You cannot hold it up for us, and we're not going to go abide by your rules and regulations. We're taking a stand. Does Harvard have a strong case?
Well, it thinks it has a case because, listen, if you're getting federal money, there are always strings attached to that. It doesn't matter what school that you are. There are going to be strings attached to the performance and behavior of the school and what you do. And a lot of people are just skipping that question and saying, listen, Harvard has $53 billion in endowment. Why are everyday Americans like all of us giving them billions of dollars? Do they need that? What, it made me reminiscent of the student loans when we were told these are going to be forgiven and paid in some by part by people who either had already paid off their student loans or never got to go to college or chose not to go to college. Like, why should other people be underwriting institutions like this that seem like they would be fine without our help?
Right. Here is Carter Stewart, a Harvard senior. Cut 30.
In my personal opinion is that Harvard kind of deserves everything that's happened, everything that's coming to it. But I think Harvard is faced with a choice, and it seems like they're making the wrong choice, which is to double down on these crazy ideas that most Americans don't agree with and to pay the price for that. So I think it's a good thing that Harvard's being forced to put its money where its mouth is.
So they want billions of dollars in grants, or they're going to allow lab animals to die because they'll have no money to feed them. But they have over $50 billion in the bank, and they want to be a nonprofit.
I mean, if you are getting a decent return, I feel like you could just use maybe some of the interest payments you're getting.
To feed the rats?
To feed the rat animals. I don't know. But again, you've got these questions about, I mean, what is it now? A third of Americans say they have little to no confidence or trust in higher education. Just a few years ago, that was 10%. So it has tripled the number of Americans who feel like, I don't like what's going on in higher education. I've got some real questions about what's actually being done and taught there, how they're getting federal subsidies, the way that money is being used. And also this week, a judge ruled that Harvard is going to have to face a lawsuit from a number of Jewish students who said, you did not do enough to protect me when there were actual threats to my safety on campus during some of these protests. So Harvard's got a lot it's going to have to answer for in the coming weeks.
If they're not a 501c3, they will have to pay something like $500 million. That means they'll be taxed at a 21% rate like every corporation. Mm-hmm. So this is a huge thing. Why not just try to comply like Columbia did? Instead, they want to stand up, but they're oblivious to public sentiment. And Robert Herr, of all people, is one of the on the legal team representing them. So I'm sure his check's going to clear. Let's see if he's going to win. But I'm not sure they're going to love the examination and the exposure that the Trump administration will demand as this case moves forward. Shannon, what time can we watch your show on Sunday?
You know what? We air in local markets at all different times, but I always tweet out the link so you can look in your local market and see us live wherever you are, or a replay within an hour or two. Then the full replay at 2 p.m. on the Fox News channel, and you'll get to see all that happens on this Sunday.
Go get him. Shannon Bream will make sure to watch. Go get him.
I'll see you Sunday night.
All right. Stay. Yeah, absolutely. 10 o'clock. That's Eastern time. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show continues.
In-depth analysis. Insightful commentary. Probing questions.
What's a furry again?
I'll tell you.
Thinks they're an animal?
Sure.
It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's kind of a disturbing pattern. This Democratic Jacobin Party, they have all these iconic people they want to die on the altar of their freedom. And it's not just Mr. Garcia. It's Mahu Khalil, the pro-Hamas spokesman. He's an iconic figure. It's Mr. Mangione. He's an iconic figure. Even on social media, Carmelo Anthony, who's an alleged killer, is an iconic figure. And they fixate on these people, and you get two things from it all, that they have no moral bearings, and they don't care about the victims or the people that these people are advocated for.
As usual, Victor Davis Hanson puts it brilliantly. There's a trend. I mean, every time he turned around, it's, you know, Luigi Mangione is not recognized by the Democratic Party, but they used it to say how unfair health care is. And then you have Mahmoud Khalil as somebody who's free speech. Really? This guy's got direct links to UNRWA. This guy's got direct links to Palestinian organizations linked to Hamas. This guy's a 31-year-old living on campus, creating unrest, negotiating directly with this Ivy League institution, taking over buildings. Now you're upset. You want to go to bat for him? Okay, and then you fade off that. And then you go, as we just went over with Shannon, to this other clown, Kilmar Garcia, who's sitting there in prison in El Salvador. And if you read the arrest in 2019, the gang experts say he's in a gang. The gang experts even have a rank for him in the gang. The gang experts, two judges said he's in a gang. And they're like, well, we just want him home. Home where? He is home in El Salvador. I'm saying to myself, if like I just saw a story on ABC. I watched ABC Nightly News on Tuesday night, and they made this guy to be a saint. Literally, he was walking on the street. He was going to a soccer game, and they just scooped him up right after he finished his 8 hours of work at the Ford dealership. I mean, that's where they make it sound. And then I'm looking at this, and I'm saying, are we talking about the same guy? I thought I was duped. Now, this is the overnight feed, so I'm up at 2:30 in the morning, and I'm watching the Nightly News. So I'm watching the replay. So it's at 6 o'clock at night. I go, do they not know about the trafficking? Eight guys in the car? Do they not know about the spousal abuse, the domestic? They had a order of protection for his wife against him that stood for 2 months. And I'm thinking to myself, did this break in between? No, they just, at the end of the feature that was of the report that was about 5 minutes old, they said, there was a domestic, there was a complaint that has been closed against him, and that there was a dispute on whether his role with the MS-13 gang. Just an afterthought. Now I see ABC has a story about his, have more of a complex background. And the question is, on the Sunday shows, are they going to talk about this great meeting? Or is this going to be the biggest embarrassment that they're going to want to forget? This big meeting with Senator Van Hollen and Kilmer. Are they going to talk about how great it was and how indefatigable he was and how Cory Booker's going to go tomorrow? Is that what they're going to talk about on Meet the Press? Ryan, you're in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, Ryan.
How you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's on your mind?
Hey, sir. I just 2 points, pros and cons about Trump's business. I'm a businessman. I'm a salesman, and I love Trump. I'm a Trump supporter. I have a buddy that sells laser etching machines that etch into metal, especially for, like, munitions plants and also large heavy machinery. Well, the lasers are made in China, and they were doubled in price, so he's lost 60% of his sales. On another note, though, I have another customer who's about to get a 120-vessel sale from South Korea, and this is from Trump opening up ANWR with Australia, Korea, South Korea, and Japan, you know, investing in the infrastructure of it. So just a little dichotomy there, but yeah.
Listen, Ryan, you bring up a very good point. Small businesses are going to be hurt immediately. Now, you always have to wonder, especially when Trump took office the first time and this time, he knew he was targeting China. So you knew something was coming. But if you're not a big corporation able to absorb this, I really feel bad for people. That's why I think Trump's got to fully realize if you're going to get a deal, speed matters, don't you think?
Oh, totally. Completely. Yeah, it does. And I love how he bulls at him and then they back off. And then he's like, okay, hey, we can talk. You know, he comes at him hard and then he's like, hey, we can talk. And then they talk and they work it out. So, hey, another thing, too, for every blue collar job, there are two white collar jobs that follow it. So an insurance agent, a real estate agent, a banker, you know, so with this reindustrialization of America,
yep,
there's more to come than just the workers in the plant.
And the other thing we got to worry about, and thanks for the call, Ryan, is security. I don't want to be talking about this every time we have a dispute with China about rare earth, about magnets, about where we're going to get our pharmaceuticals. I'm tired of it. I mean, we got our wake up call. Why did we not wake up? You know, President Biden, evidently that we started immediately setting up a depot, my words, probably not the right word, but essentially a place to deposit at where we could hoard our own rare earth. Now we need to defend, and that just stopped when the pandemic was over and he wanted to reinvigorate relations, thought it wasn't worth the effort. And then he started depleting our own oil and gas reserves to keep oil and gas down while he stopped drilling. We know that. So Trump is too smart for that. So to me, we have to start building up our own rare earth, cut deals, learn to mine, learn to refine, and do the Defense Production Act. I think it's an emergency because when it comes to AI, when it comes to weapons, bombs, I want to be able to do it. I don't want to depend on China ever because more than likely we're going to be opposing them. And as long as that's an option, they're more likely to be aggressive with us. Coming up next, Tommy Lahren will be with us. Then she's going to, I think, going to go to Outnumbered. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, Sunday, 10 o'clock, One Nation.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Donald Trump is not an aberration. He is the logical, inevitable conclusion of an American political system dominated by corporate and dark money. And if we are to defeat him, we must defeat the system that created him. Money in politics is the hand of oligarchy.
Exactly. As she hopped on her private jet and went home, unless, of course, the jet was being taken, she could go on first class and go home. Just every time you want to fight oligarchy, it's always good to show opulence. Tommy Lahren knows all about that. Host of Outkicks, Tommy Lahren is fearless. Fox News contributor who's going to be doing Outnumbered in 25 minutes, but is so loyal to the show. I'm honored, Tommy. Great to see you. Tackle AOC's big worry that don't blame Donald Trump. He's just a symptom of the system that's sick.
The sick system. Listen, if you really believe in the oligarchy and politicians having too much money and too much power, you should be flying Spirit Airlines.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe not even Spirit. Maybe you should be driving an electric vehicle. Maybe not a Tesla, but maybe like a Prius. Then I believe that you're committed to the cause. But if you're just going like a rock star so you can assemble people because it makes you feel like you're somebody, that's what this all is. This just feeds their egos. They love that they can get a lot of people to come see them. I believe that AOC has always wanted to just be famous. I don't think she has a care or concern about passing a bill. I don't believe she ever has. I don't think she has real care or concern about being a leader of the Democrat Party. I think she wants to be famous, and this is her conduit to do it because she can't sing, she can't act, and so she's going to go into politics.
You know, what's interesting is at first I thought that the worst thing that could happen to Democrats is for these two socialists to get big crowds, because it's not doing it. Bernie Sanders getting a big crowd is not news.
Yeah.
His agenda doesn't fly. And then AOC to want to take up the mantle, I said to myself, that's probably great for news for Republicans. I think the worst news for Republicans would be to have a candidate like Bill Maher or John Fetterman without his limitations, to go, you know what, I'm going to work with Trump when I can. What Whitmer said a couple of weeks ago, yeah, I'll work with him when I can. And, you know, before she covered her face and said, I'm embarrassed to be here. But when I can, I'm going to separate. I think that would be the scariest thing for Republicans. But Nate Silver and others are saying that she is going to emerge as the star on that on the left. Do you think so?
No. I think that she's going to get crowds for them, but she doesn't have a legislative history. I guess you could say the Green New Deal was her brainchild.
First week, yeah. Like, but she wrote on a napkin as a bartender.
But she's never done anything impressive. And Bernie's been warning about the oligarchy since before I was born. So the oligarchy that you're warning about still hasn't come to fruition. At some point, you know, you're crying wolf, you're crying Bigfoot here. But I think you're right. And I think that Democrat is going to emerge. I think that Democrat is waiting in the wings right now for the dust to settle. They're not going to come out too soon. They're not going to try to make a name for themselves now. They're going to wait until we get closer to midterms, maybe even closer to 2028. They're waiting back for all the crazies to dissipate. And it's not Gavin Newsom, the pick me, here's my podcast. It's not AOC. It's not Bernie Sanders. I don't think it's even Whitmore. I don't think it's any of them. I think it's probably going to be more of a Westmore, a Shapiro, maybe a Bashir from Kentucky. All these other jokers right now are just trying to get attention and fame.
Every time I bring up Governor Bashir and I say, well, he's a moderate, I get ripped because no, or people just say, Brian, just look at what he's done. He is not a moderate. Don't believe it. And then you see Bill Maher come out essentially say, and with Governor Shapiro, he couldn't get him off his talking points on Bill Maher's show. So if this guy is still pumping out the talking points 2 years before he's running, I'm wondering where, I mean, tragedy would happen with his family. I'm wondering where the natural politician is, and people point to Wes Moore, but he's driving the Maryland economy into the ditch.
Same thing, obviously, with Gavin Newsom, but Gavin Newsom feels icky when you listen to him. Some of these others don't feel icky. For some people,
Wes Moore's very talented.
Yes. When you look at somebody, that might be most of it, is just somebody who feels calming. Let's remember, people elected Joe Biden in 2020, who I believe was already cognitively slipping then. There were signs, certainly signs way back then. I think that they're going to need somebody who's a stabilizing force, who appears more moderate, who appears to be more genuine. And those three at least fit that bill. They can work on, you know, their talking points. But I think that they are much more dangerous to the Republican cause an electoral victory than an AOC or a Bernie or some of these other outrageous Jasmine Crockett. There's the ones that get media attention because they're interesting, but they're not moderate enough for most American people.
And what I think Democrats have to do, same as Republicans, J.D. Vance is not going to be anointed. People are upset that Trump didn't just say, J.D. is my successor. Why would he?
No.
I don't think there's, even if he does a great job, fight it out. You know, let Rubio and J.D. Vance and whoever wants to emerge, fight it out. You can't put your hand on the scale. That's what Democrats have done for the last, what, 8 years? They don't let these candidates get better by having a bad debate, a good speech. Yeah. They debate each other. Find out what Westmore's weakness is, but don't look for Tommy Lahren to do it. But why don't you see if Governor Beshear has some problems with Westmore? Why don't you see if AOC can try to, you know, to mark up Gavin Newsom?
Can you imagine AOC in an actual primary debate, though? I think that would be stunning to
Fascinating.
Watch.
You know why? Because we haven't seen any debate on the left. It is whatever Nancy Pelosi wants, whatever Chuck Schumer does. You don't see anyone pushing back. There's no Murkowski. There's no Chip Roy. There's nobody people like pushing back against whatever the powers in their party want to be.
I've actually never seen AOC actually explain a policy position either. We hear her, the oligarchy and we've heard all the taglines, but I've never heard her actually go deep into a policy or a position or be challenged. Has she ever put herself in a position to be challenged by anyone, Republican or Democrat? I don't think so. I'd be curious to see how that would go.
But do you notice she's not talking squad? She's not, because she wants to distance herself a little from the extreme
She's
left.
The Beyonce of the Destiny's Child, let's be honest. Yes. She's still the squad, but she just wants to be the more famous member of the squad. And some of them also lost their seats, so I don't know if she really wants to tie herself to them. But she wants to be the Beyonce. She wants to be famous. That's what this is about for me. It's all about fame. I really don't think that she's a serious person, and she wants this because she wants to be a thought leader. I think she wants to be famous.
All right, so let's talk about what you're going to be talking about on Outnumbered, and I imagine it's going to be the lead. I was stunned to see Chris Van Hollen. Last night it came across that he got his meeting, and he sits down with Kilmer Garcia, at which time he wants to transmit to his wife, who he beat, that he's, you know, he loves her. He's dressed in a shirt that he probably got from The Gap. I don't know what's going on there. One minute they're in white outfits in prison. The next minute he's having a casual lunch with Senator Van Hollen. But when you look at this guy's background, Tommy, do you think that they're going to continue to paint him as a hero that has to come home when he does beat his wife, when he is caught with MS-13, when gang experts who find him in the field, you see the police report? This guy has got a rank at MS-13, according to the gang experts. So if you are Van Hollen, if you are Cory Booker, do you do this? Do you continue to fight for this?
I think they've dug in so hard on this, they have no choice. I don't think they can backtrack at this point. I don't think that they could lay off this and say, all right, maybe this isn't our martyr. I think they're so far deep that they just have to hope that there are American people watching MSNBC and CNN that really do believe this is just a Maryland father that was plucked off the street and disappeared. They have to go the distance on this narrative because they can't turn back. They're in too deep now.
Right. And you just see them being mocked by the president of El Salvador. Yeah, you know, it's just they're just mocking him and saying you're this is a great quote from him. He says, Kilmer Garcia miraculously risen from death camps in torture, now sipping margaritas with Senator Van Hollen, the tropical paradise of El Salvador. He said, now that he's confirmed healthy, he gets the honor of staying in El Salvador's custody. So and then, of course, there's a pushback from the House saying we're not going to finance any type of move. So he's mocking that. He thinks this is comically stupid.
And it is comically stupid. And the optics of that photo, that looked like an awkward date on The Bachelor is what that looked like. It actually reminded me of the first interview that Kamala and Tim Walz did, where they were awkwardly sitting at that table. How bad that looked. That's what it looked like. And so, it doesn't look good when you've got somebody sitting there with somebody who is an alleged gang member and also has protective orders from his wife that apparently wants him back so badly. There's no way that this looks good if you're paying attention.
All right. Tommy Lahren's going to be on the couch 15 minutes on Outnumbered. And you're going to be wearing the same outfit, right?
Yep.
There's no costume changes?
Nope. This is the color wheel, and this is what is chosen for me today.
That was chosen by higher powers. Tommy, thanks so much.
Good to see you.
Do we follow you on social media?
At Tommy Lahren, the one and only. One with the blue check mark. Don't follow the others that ask you for money from Nigeria.
Okay, true. Okay, dude. Make sure you do that. And where do we find you on OutKick? What time?
Outkick.com, 1 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday.
Back in a moment.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
There hasn't been a single day since I got out 15 years ago that I didn't wake up and truly want to serve again. I didn't want to do it because of the rank. I didn't want to do it for recognition. I just did it because the mission never left me.
And that is Dakota Myers. He's Congressional Medal Award honoree. His valor that he showed was so extraordinary that even Barack Obama had to recognize it. And he decides, I'm going to go back into the Marines. He never would have done that if Trump didn't win, if Secretary Hegseth wasn't named, because now people are joining. And I'm telling you, I had more family members in the military say, I'm not putting my next generation in by the way they treated us and by the way we left Afghanistan. We fight a 20-year war. I know people that died maimed and never came back the same. And then you leave the way you left. And the same thing with Iraq. President Obama, after the surge, pulls everybody out. And they almost lost Baghdad. They had to all go back in again. So they're thinking to themselves, you know, why am I doing this? I'm telling you right now, Secretary of Defense Hegseth, I was at NORAD over the weekend for a special for Fox Nation. I saw more military Canadians and Americans, and they say there's such a great feeling. And one of the quotes was from the four-star general told me, I've never seen a secretary connect with the fighting men and women before. They love having him around. And that's why Dakota Myers is signing up. Pete's back. He's got my back. And I still want to fight. Also, like professional players, they always miss the locker room and the guys and the self-worth. What could you possibly do? He's a blue-collar guy. That's more, that's more satisfying than being a Marine. So I think that's big. Just a quick note. I'm History, Liberty, and Last, my Fox Nation tour. Dayton, Ohio, June 21st. August 23rd, Dallas, Texas, at the Winspear Opera House. And then in Richmond, Virginia, September 27th, Dominion Energy Center, Carpenter Theater. So hope to see everyone there. Let's go out to Sandra listening in New Jersey. Hey, Sandra.
Good morning, Brian. Brian, last night I was reading the Epoch Times. That's one of my sources where I learned from, and I was surprised to feel they were leaning towards Garcia in this case. So they were saying that in 2019, there was a court order to protect him from going to El Salvador. And I also read maybe because it was because of another gang group that were after him. So that tells me directly that he's in a gang group. That tells me that.
Yeah.
But
I'm going to factor something else in. Yesterday, it became the ICE officials, when asked about his arrest and then ultimate departure over to El Salvador, when he was scooped up, they said, are you feeling danger for your life if you go to Central America or El Salvador? He said no. And that's a total change from what he said 2 years ago.
There you go. You're right.
All right.
This is a tough case.
Go get him. Gary in Oklahoma. It's not really a tough case. Gary in Oklahoma, what's on your mind?
Well, you've been talking about we're not doing nothing for rare earth. And they've just closed the deal in Muskogee to build a rare earth refinery here.
Do you know what kind of metals it is?
No, I do not.
Okay. The refineries is what we need. That is great news, Gary, because that's what we need. They say that if we do get, you know, the crazy environmentalists to let us mine, they say the main thing is we have to send it out to China to get refined. You're saying we're building a refinery here?
Yes. That's what the paper said here in Muskogee.
Well, that's good news. That is a matter of national security. Thanks so much for the call. Just want to get this local for a second. This is how out of control these cities are in New York. I just get this alert. A 21-year-old subway rider was stabbed multiple times with a metal knuckle knife in a random subway attack in the Bronx. Just happened. The stabbing unfolded as the perpetrator was going between carriages on the number 2 train, which, by the way, I take 2 or 3 times a week, about 7 a.m. So the place is packed. Officers found a conscious and alert victim, 219 Station Street, on the wake of the attack. He was suffering from multiple stab wounds in his forearm and his neck. I mean, this is the craziness. I'm not saying you blame Adams for everything and the police chief, but do you know in New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, you can't arrest anybody and hold on to them? Do you know in Chicago, one of the illegal aliens that they picked up on Monday had been arrested 6 previous times in Chicago? Now, I am sure we're going to find out that this guy is some twisted individual. Who knows if he's here legal or not? But we don't let cops be cops. I think it's absolutely insane. Thanks so much for the call. But what we were just getting before is the caller was saying that it's really a hard case to crack. It's not hard. This guy's a gang member. He should be in jail. If they want to go through proper channels, he was on a deport list. Maybe not to El Salvador, but for you to sleep well at night, just know that he had no problem going to El Salvador. That's what he told everyone. What I think is the most interesting thing is what's happening to this week with Japan and what's happening with Italy, who's going to bring back as one of the leaders in the EU, a message that the president's 100% sure we're going to get a deal. We're going to get a deal on the trade. I think the market needs a deal going into Easter. It would be great to announce something today. The framework with Japan, the framework for Italy, the framework for Vietnam, the framework for Israel, and start getting our allies in order and let them know that there's going to be some competition because China is working everybody's locker room right now. Right now they're traveling through Malaysia. They went to Vietnam. They're trying to get trade deals done and get some loyalty, I guess, signed off on. Here's President Trump yesterday when he opened things up to reporters. Cut 13.
What if there is not a trade deal with the EU by the time of the end of your 90-day pause on recession?
Oh, there'll be a trade deal, 100%. Oh. Why, you think there won't be? Of course there'll be a trade deal. Very much. They want to make one very, very much. And we're going to make a trade deal. I fully expect it. But it'll be a fair deal.
So this is what one of our earlier guests said, that half of the president's got half a mind to do the deals. But the other thing he wants is a tariff revenue. And that's what came out. The audio's not great here, but I want you to hear it. Why? Because if we're importing goods and we're getting 10% right off the top, we're $37 trillion in debt. If we don't want to tax the American people till they don't want to start any business, this is where you could be getting the money. Cut 12.
There's been talks with Japan and Italy this week. Do you expect to announce an initial trade deal with any of these countries by
At a certain point, yeah. We're in no rush. We're in no rush. You have to understand we're getting right now 25% on cars, 25% on steel, 25% on aluminum. We're getting a 10% baseline.
Because I think on some level, he wants that money. Problem is, a lot of the car companies and other things were committed to getting different parts from outside the country. They come back with higher prices. They got to raise the price of the product, less sales. So they don't, less profit. Thanks so much for listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I want you to keep it here. Definitely watch me Sunday at 10 o'clock on One Nation at BrianKilmeade.com to win to see us all on stage. Keep it here, everyone. In Trump time, if you miss a minute, you miss a lot.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.